Good afternoon to all of you. Certainly a beautiful Sabbath day that we have. It's good to see everyone. We are going to continue into Zechariah for a Bible study today. Zechariah 5 and 6, we will plan to cover these two chapters. And we now come to another vision that Zechariah saw. So this is in chapter 5 now. And I turned and raised my eyes and saw there a flying scroll. So I guess it was something like a scroll was kind of a rolled up piece of paper and it's flying. But this was no ordinary scroll. He said to me, "What do you see?" And I see. And I answered and I said, "I see a flying scroll. Its length is 20 cubits and its width is 10 cubits. And so you find that he had this, he saw this scroll, which was actually, when you look at the length and width of the cubits, it's about 30 feet by 15 feet. So it was quite large. That size actually corresponds to the holy place in the temple. Let's look at one scripture over here in 1 Kings 6 and verse 3. 1 Kings 6, verse 3. Again, keeping our place in Zechariah. The vestibule in front of the sanctuary of the house was 20 cubits long across the width of the house, and the width of the vestibule extended 10 cubits from the front of the house. So it's the same size as this scroll. Now, when you also tie in Exodus 26, we won't turn there, but when one calculates the width of the boards that are put into the holy place, it equals to 30 by 15 feet. So it's kind of unique that this is the same size as the holy place in front of the Holy of Holies. So we go back to Zechariah 5, verse 3. He said to me, "This is the curse that goes out over all the face of the earth. Every thief shall be expelled according to this side of the scroll," so it was written on one side, "and every perjurer or liar shall be expelled according to that side of it. And I will send out the curse, says the Lord, and it shall enter the house of the thief and the house of one who swears falsely by my name. It will remain in the midst of his house and consume it with its timber and stones." So the scroll is written on both sides, one against the liars and one against the thieves. Now, again, keeping our place, and let's look at this law back in Leviticus 19. Leviticus 19 and verse 11. And you have both of these mentioned here. Leviticus 19 verse 11, "You shall not steal, nor deal falsely, nor lie to one another. And you shall not swear by my name falsely, nor shall you profane the name of your God. I am the Lord." So this scroll had this proclamation against liars and thieves, and the size of this scroll corresponds to the holy place. So this is coming out from, we could say, before the throne of God. The holy place represented the throne of God. So this curse is sent out to the liars and thieves from God, and a warning against them. And so eventually, in the end time, the house of the thief and the perjurer, the one who swears by God's name falsely, will be completely consumed. So the emphasis in this particular prophecy is placed on the destruction of such evil people. The final judgment of all thieves and liars will be during the Great White Throne Judgment, and they'll be cast in the lake of fire, which we find in Revelation 21, verse 8. Let's look at Revelation 21 and verse 8. The cowardly, the unbelieving, the abominable, the murderers and sexual immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars shall have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. So this is a pretty powerful prophecy against anyone who continues in that way of life. And so the object here is to learn from that vision and not be a thief or a liar. Now, another vision that Zechariah saw, it begins here in verse 5, Zechariah 5, verse 5. The angel who talked with me came out and said to me, lift up your eyes and see what is that goes forth. And so I said, asked, well, what is it? It's a basket that is going forth. He said, this is their resemblance throughout the earth. So a basket. Now in the Hebrew it's ephah, and that is referring to a measurement of a container in which wheat or some type of grain was put in to that particular container. So this basket that normally would contain some wheat or some type of grain is gone forth, and there is a lead disc on top of it, as it said in verse 7. And so this lead disc is taken off the top, and who's in this basket, not what's in the basket, is who is in the basket. It's a woman is in this basket. What is this all about? You got this basket and no grain, but a woman in there. And so he said, this is wickedness. And he thrust her down into the basket and threw the lead cover over its mouth. So here Zechariah saw this vision of this basket, this woman, the lid taken off. He sees this woman, and then the angel shoves her back down in the basket and puts the lid on top of it and says, this is wickedness. This is wickedness. Now, according to Jameson Fawcett Brown commentary, the word wickedness here in this particular case indicates a particular development or a particular specific wickedness. So, Where do we go with this? There's no more explanation about this. So one place where we can go and maybe get some type of information about what Zechariah saw here is over here in Revelation 17. Let's look at a couple of verses in Revelation 17 and Revelation 18. And we'll put all of these together here as we go through these verses. Revelation 17, let's look at the last part of the verse, Revelation 17, come and I will show you the judgment of the great harlot who sits on many waters, with whom the kings of the earth committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth who were made drunk with the wine of her fornication. Let's look at verse 5. And on her forehead a name was written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots, and the abominations of the earth. And then in verse 18 of the same chapter, and the woman whom you saw is that great city, which reigns over the kings of the earth. You saw earlier, Babylon the Great, Now the thought continues in chapter 18, verse 1. After these things, I saw another angel coming down from heaven, having great authority. The earth was illuminated with his glory, and he cried mightily with a loud voice, saying, Babylon the great is fallen, has become a dwelling place of demons, a prison of every foul spirit, cage for every unclean and hated bird. All the nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. The kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth have become rich through the abundance of her luxury. Again, referring to Babylon the Great. So, even though Zechariah doesn't really explain any more about this woman, it seems like Revelation is giving us a little clue as to what this woman was in the basket. Now, Zechariah sees something else about what happens with the basket. And this is in verse 9. I raised my eyes and looked, and there were two women coming with the wind in their wings, and they had wings like the wings of a stork. A stork has wings, really, broad wings. And they lifted the basket between heaven and earth. So they come and lift this basket. And I said to the angel who talked with me, where are they carrying the basket? Not who are these carrying it, just where are they taking it? Because we don't know any more than what we read here. But he asked the question, where are they taking it? He said to me, to build a house for it, a place for it, for this basket, in the land of Shinar. And when it is ready, the basket will be set there on its base. So again, what is this all referring to? Taking it into the land of Shinar. The land of Shinar is where Babylon was, ancient Babylon. It's in Iraq today. And it seems to refer again to the time of the end concerning Babylon the Great. Now, Sansino, of course, a commentary, Jewish commentary, says this, that it was to be a permanent home, the land of Shinar, for wickedness. It's that old, as it says here, poetic name for Babylon. And it's set upon its base. And its base is kind of like the foundation. It would be the home of this basket with that woman in it, who is called wickedness. Now, Erdman's commentary says that sin not only finds a natural home in Babylon, but worship is paid to it. There's some type of worship that is going to be involved here. And so it's transported where mankind first organized a rebellion and revolt against God. Remember that story, Genesis 10. We won't turn there. I'm sorry, Genesis 11. And where was the Tower of Babel? In the land of Shinar. The land of Shinar. And one last comment from, again, Jemison Fawcett Brown. It says, to build a house for it in Shinar is the area of Babylonia, the capital of God-opposed world kingdoms. And so represents, in general, a seat of irreligion, a seat of, we would call, paganism, and, of course, idolatry against God. So that's what it seems to be referring to. Now, chapter 6, we come to another vision. I turned and raised my eyes and looked, and behold, four chariots were coming from between two mountains, the mountains of bronze. The first chariot, what we see, has red horses. The second chariot, black horses. Third chariot, white horses. And with the fourth chariot, dappled horses. Strong, steeds. Now again, what is this all about? Again, you look at some commentaries, and commentaries have different opinions about what this might be. We have to basically look at what the Bible is saying here, but according to Sansino, it appears to be God commissioning these horses and chariots to go out, and they will, as it says here, bring punishment upon any power that has come against Israel. So we don't know anything more about the different colors here, why they are the way they are. Nothing is explained about them here. We don't see any significance in the context about the meaning of the various colors. But we have to go on and see a little bit more about this vision, and we'll read it here in verse 4 to 7. Kind of indicates that Sansino may have been on a point as to what we see here in verse 4 to 7. And I answered and said to the angel who talked with me, "What are these, my Lord?" And the angel answered and said to me, "These are the four spirits of heaven who go out from their station before the Lord of all the earth." So they are going out from God. The one with the black horses is going to the north country, and the white are going after them. So you have the black and the white going up to the north. And the dappled one, the one who's kind of gray in color, going toward the south. Then the strong seeds went out eager to go that they might walk to and fro throughout the earth. He said, go walk to and fro throughout the earth. So they walked to and fro throughout the earth. Now we saw a similar prophecy in chapter 1, but this is a little bit different. We now see black and white horses with chariots going up toward the north. From time to time you find that the north country was the direction from which the enemies came in to Israel and to Judah from the north. In verse 8 he called to me and said, saying, "See, those who go to the north country have given rest to my spirit in the north country." So, in fact, during this time that Joshua and Zerubbabel were hesitant in building the rebuilding the temple, there was some opposition toward it. And, of course, we covered that last time, about 18 years' worth of opposition, and nothing was being done. And a lot of that opposition was coming from outside of Israel, and some of it was from the north. Some scholars do, though, look at this and give future meaning to this verse, and they say, "Those who go toward the north country will satisfy my anger against the north territory," or the north country. So they're going out from the Lord. They're going out to the north. And even Sansino continues to say that they assuage God's wrath by inflicting punishment on Babylon. So, again, one wonders how this is all going to play out in the future. Babylon, of course, was always the was one of the oppressors of Israel, especially Judah. The good news is that from the north country, Israelites will come back into the land of promise, and God will be satisfied with what takes place up in that area, a destruction of that, we know from what we read earlier in chapter 5, of the whole Babylonian system, Babylonian the Great. And we come to something else here, and again, without having too much of what the angel says and reveals, we could come up with all kinds of speculation, but it's best just to stay as much as we can with what the scriptures are saying here, because some of this, we just don't know how exactly how this will all play out. But the word of the Lord came to me saying, verse 9, now 10, receive the gift from the captives. So this is present time there in this case, and they're named Hildiah and Tobijah and Jediah. We've come from Babylon. And remember, some Jews have already come from Babylon to rebuild the temple. Some are still there and will come later with Ezra and others. But you have these men now coming, and Zechariah is told to receive the gift from these men. And then go that same day and enter the house of Josiah, the son of Zephaniah. And these are the only places we see where these names are listed here, at least in this chapter. And this gift was silver and gold. And so Zechariah is told to take this gift of silver and gold and make an elaborate crown and set it on the head of Joshua, the son of Jozadak, the high priest. So apparently this was a silversmith that he was to take it to. A crown was made, and Zechariah was to take it and place it on Joshua, the high priest here. Last time we read in chapter, I think it was 3, that a turban was given to the high priest. Remember, he was given clothes, and then a turban was put on his head. Did you know there's something else that was put on the head of Aaron? Exodus 29, verse 6. We saw this last time with the turban being placed on his head. Exodus 29 and verse 6. Starting in verse 5, you shall take the garments and put the tunic on Aaron, the robe of the ephod, the breastplate, and gird him with an intricately woven band of the ephod. You shall put a turban on his head and put the holy crown on the turban. So here you have the other part of the turban being added here in this particular instance, a couple of chapters from where we saw where the turban was put on his head. So you have this turban on the head of Aaron the high priest and a crown on that turban. It's interesting in verse 12, back here in Zechariah 6, then speak to him saying, thus says the Lord of hosts, saying, behold, the man whose name is the branch, from his place he shall branch out and he shall build the temple of the Lord. Now we're getting from Joshua the high priest now to the branch, referring to Jesus Christ, as we saw last time in Isaiah 11, and the branch will branch out. Verse 13, yes, he shall build the temple of the Lord and will bear the glory and shall sit and rule on his throne. He'll be a priest on his throne and the council of peace shall be between them both. And so just as Aaron and Joshua are given a crown on their heads, we find Jesus Christ here being referred to not only as a high priest, but as the King of Kings. And we've mentioned this before, that he comes as a king priest, the King of Kings, Lord of Lords. He is our high priest. And it talks about this council of peace be between them both. So there's a possibility that this is a peace arrangement between Jesus Christ, our high priest, and the physical priesthood. At that time, it was Joshua. In the millennium, it'll be the sons of Zadok who are offering the sacrifices, the priest during that time. So there's some indication here, some of this was referring to back at that time and also showing forth a type of prophetic incident that will take place. And we find something else interesting here. Verse 14, the elaborate crown shall be a memorial in the temple of the Lord for Hillel, Tobijah and Jediah and Hen, the son of Zephaniah. We're talking about the same people, a little bit different Hebrew names here at this time. And so this is where the crown now then is stored in the temple as a memorial of what was given to Jozadak, similar to what was given to Aaron, and then it's kept in memory of the four, of the men here, three men who gave the gift and the other one who put it together, a memory of them, of that gift of gold and silver, a crown. So one wonders if something is a memorial back there at the temple for that crown, what that refers to in the future. But then you find verse 15. Even those from afar shall come and build the temple of the Lord. So once it began to be rebuilt, you had other Jews coming from the other area, from Babylon and the north and other parts of the region, coming in and helping the rebuilding of the temple, even at that time. But also, this will happen in the millennium as well. From afar, people from out of captivity will come back and be involved in the rebuilding of the temple during the millennium. And you shall know that the Lord of hosts has sent me to you, and this shall come to pass if you diligently obey the voice of the Lord your God. There's one other point here, and that is Jesus Christ is building his spiritual temple, of which we are all a part. And from afar means can even be down through generations. And so we are in this generation somehow involved in this temple that is being built, the spiritual temple that is led by Jesus Christ as our high priest. The point is we need to be repentant. Repentant and obedient. And from what we saw earlier, especially not getting involved in lying or in stealing, and again, all the other laws of God that we should be following. So next time then, when we get into a Bible study, we'll then get into chapter 7.